I never got any money from you.
UFO might just as well stand for unprecedented financial opportunity.
Be normal.
This is The Saucer Life, a podcast wherein we examine concepts, events, or people orbiting the world of flying saucers. Few preconceptions, snark when justified, no belief, no debunking. Today, something a little different. I'm going to interview myself. This sounds really stupid, I'm well aware, but I couldn't make the episode I was in the middle of producing actually work well. And I came up with this as a stopgap. Also, this is work-wise, personal-wise, just a difficult, crowded time of year. So I wanted to get something out because I was running a little bit behind the schedule that I had arbitrarily made for myself. So I had this idea. Now, as weird as it may seem, I don't have any preconceived ideas or answers for these questions. As I wrote them, I had no idea what I would say. Indeed, I came up with these questions because I really wasn't sure what I'd say when I asked myself. This sounds made up, but it's true. And just so you know, the next time we do listener questions, feel free to re-ask these questions or similar questions, because odds are the answers may well be different. So let's go ahead and get started. All right, I've got my list of questions, which is not exhaustive, not even complete. I may ask, I can't believe I'm doing this. I may ask myself follow-up questions. Now, let's be fair, this is the sort of self-indulgent nonsense that I usually torture the people on the Patreon with, but you're getting it here as well. And I'm not saying I'm rushing through this to get to the basketball tournament, but I'm not actually. Purdue's playing not till tonight, so I can wait. Although I do have my various 50 and 75 cent bets on all the underdogs. It's going to pay off one of these days. So here we go. What is the best episode of The Saucer Life that you've created? Or if not the best, your favorite episode? Oh, that's a good question. I can't believe I'm asking myself questions, but I think it works. And if not, you've already stopped listening. So, hey, best or favorite episode of the show that I've done. I think as difficult as it was to do, as confusing the story as the story is, and as sort of depressing as some of it is, I think the two or three episodes that we did about the Philadelphia experiment and the that was really good. Another sort of multiple episode epic that I think we did a pretty nice job on was the whole saga of the Gulf Breeze sightings and the Gulf Breeze 6. I think that those turned out really well. There's a lot of really good information in them. Looking back, they seem like they were a lot of work, and they were. That Philadelphia experiment episode, I strongly considered just having that be my swan song and hanging it up because, you know, I was tired after doing that. Not like tired like I was in a coal mine or digging ditches or anything like that. I mean, this is all relative to the fact that podcasting is really not, you know, physically demanding. But I think those two sort of long sagas, those were pretty good. What is the worst or least favorite episode that you've done? This one's a little more difficult. I tend to be a little hypercritical. I don't think I mean, I've got favorites, but I don't think any of them are the best. Or, I mean, sometimes they approach good, but that's about it. But there are some that I am not happy with. I sort of scratch my head and wonder why I did things the way I did. I think probably the biggest one is actually the first episode that I did, which really should have been kept back for kind of an unaired pilot. That one, if you remember or you've listened to it more recently, was about a book called like A UFO Appears, Does Things, and Then Goes Away. And that's not the actual title, but the title is sort of more of a description of the book than anything else. And it was by a woman named Helen Gismondi, who was in the Detroit area, I think. And it was a strange book. I couldn't find out much about her. It was more about her life than it was about the UFO sighting. And I think nowadays, I don't think I would use it because there wouldn't be enough to work with, or it might be a segment on a bonus episode or something. But those early episodes are very, very, very compact. And so I thought this would work well. And I think what I was looking back, it's thin. There's not much there. But I think what I was thinking was that I wanted to make sure to start off with something that would, and this sounds really sort of snobby and condescending. I wanted to come up with a topic for a first episode that drove away sort of what I thought would be the wrong sort of listeners. And I mean, that's a very negative way to say it, but a more positive way to say it was sort of setting out my stall as, you know, this is the sort of thing you're going to get. It's going to be a lot of obscure stuff. It's going to be stuff that you don't get on other UFO podcasts. And to be honest, I mean, let's face it, there are reasons why you don't get some of this stuff on other UFO podcasts, because it's not that great. But sort of like, you know, if you're looking for Roswell, if you're looking for abductions, if you're looking for Disclosure, you know, go somewhere else, pal, because we've got a, you know, 80-page book, self-published book about somebody's strange sighting that, you know, maybe was purchased by six people. That's what we're doing here on The Saucer Life. So when I think about my least favorite episode, that's sort of the one that jumps out to me, is that, you know, I know what I was doing. I know what my intentions were, but I don't know, not necessarily the best way to go about it. All right, next up, The X-Files, Tell Us Your Thoughts. I don't know why I put that there. I've mentioned The X-Files a few times on this show. I think there was a 90s focused episode where I talked about The X-Files a bit, and if you've missed that or I'm completely misremembering having talked about it, I watched the first episode when it aired. I was excited by the ads and the promos. It was, you know, Friday nights when I was a senior in high school, so I really wasn't doing much. That's not true. I actually missed quite a few episodes, or had to tape them. Remember taping things? It was awesome. I remember being very impressed with it from the beginning. I thought the dialogue was good. I thought it was spooky. It was lit well. I recognized bits of the episodes from, or like realist, like the things the episodes were based on. I picked up on a lot of those. Didn't pick up on a lot more that I learned about later, but it was fun. And I remember the episode where it was a dumb Face on Mars sort of thing. I mean, all Face on Mars things are dumb, but this one in particular, it was a dumb episode. I forget what the name of it was. It was a first season one, but I didn't like the episode, but I do acknowledge that alone in a dark house out in the country, it did creep me out a little bit. Loved the first season finale. I thought that was amazing. Second season, I liked it. I continued to like the show. It didn't feel like the same show, though. The first season was kind of scrappy, kind of we don't know where we're going with this, kind of I don't believe we're going to be, you know, I don't know if we're going to be canceled or not, so let's do this and this and this and this. And it was fun. The second season, you get a little bit more into the mythology building. And I liked the mythology building. Nowadays, when I go back and watch X-Files episodes, I'm more likely to watch the so-called Monster of the Week episodes rather than the sort of so-called myth arc episodes. It's all really good stuff. And I watched it on a fairly regular basis when and as I could. You know, being the first four seasons were the movie came out the summer after I graduated from college, and I was at my first real grown-up professional job, and a bunch of us who were in the sort of same training group or same cohort at this job, we all, not all of us, but most of us decided that we were going to, you know, grab our boyfriends or girlfriends and head out to Circle Center Mall, which was still pretty cool at the time in Indianapolis, and see the X-Files movie on opening night. And I honestly don't really pay attention to X-Files fan stuff and fan opinions. I don't know. It's not like Doctor Who or Star Trek where I sort of get worked up about what other people think. But I just remember that after the movie, I felt a little let down. I didn't think the movie was great. I was a little confused by it. And I never really got back to watching it with the same regularity as I had before. And that was only intensified when David Duchovny sort of does a sort of hokey pokey in and out, I'm not sure I'm on the show or not thing in the last few seasons. I thought that Robert Patrick was good. I thought Annabeth Gish was great, but it wasn't the show. It wasn't the same show, and it was a good show. It just wasn't the same show. I thought the finale was lousy. I thought the second movie was, again, a great movie, not necessarily a great X-Files movie. I don't know. In the revival series that they've had, some really good episodes in there and some ones that I don't really care about. So I sort of, you know, grew increasingly lukewarm about the X-Files as it went. But I loved it, and I loved the spinoffs. I loved the Lone Gunman show. I loved it. I was so excited when that came out on DVD, and I was so disappointed when some of my DVDs were faulty and I had to send away for replacements. But I was sort of doggedly determined to get the working DVDs. And there were those cheapy double-sided ones where you flip it over. They cheaped out. I thought Millennium was, when it was good, some of the best TV of the 90s. The second season finale was amazing when they thought that would be the series finale. Loved that. I think I did watch Harsh Realm for a book project. I actually tracked down the DVD of Harsh Realm, of which only I think three episodes actually aired. It was terrible. But the X-Files universe is fun. And I think it's responsible for bringing a lot of people in the late 90s into the UFO field, along with the 50th anniversary of Roswell and all the hype surrounding that. X-Files, good stuff. And speak of Roswell, and it appears, what's the deal with Roswell? ? Is what I've written down here. Again, I'm not sure what I was thinking with this one. So it's not just me answering questions that I've asked myself. It's me answering terrible questions that I've asked myself. So what's the deal with Roswell? I've said before things like, I hate Roswell. There will never be a Roswell episode, or at least not a a sort of straight, normal Roswell episode. It's just overdone, and it's so crowded. So many people have you know, come forward and come forward generations later with, you know, my now dead Uncle Billy told me blah, blah, blah. And I'm not sure what I could add to Roswell that hasn't already been dealt with. Other topics, some of the more obscure topics, maybe there's been stuff about them, but I like to think I add some value to those even well-worn topics. But I think Roswell is just, I don't know, kind of worn down to the nub. And I'm not sure what I can do with Roswell that wouldn't be the same as every other Roswell thing. I like the challenge, and I've sat down with, you know, pencil and paper and, you know, thought about this. It's like, okay, how would I do a Roswell episode? I don't know. I can't think of a good angle. I can't think of anything about Roswell that I would want to do. The most I would do would be something like, you know, count down the top five dumbest Roswell theories or something like that. But that sort of listicle clickbaity sort of thing doesn't really appeal to me either. I have a really difficult time with Roswell. Probably, I don't know. Now I'm thinking, well, that sounds like a challenge, right? I need to think of a way to not hate Roswell, to come up with an episode about it. But I don't know. There will be a Roswell episode before this show ends its run. I will not leave everybody without a Roswell episode. All right. You've mentioned Jim Keith and Ken Thomas in the past. They wrote a book about the octopus conspiracy. I think Jim Keith, I know it was Ken Thomas, but I think Jim Keith helped out on it. Did you watch the new Netflix doc on the octopus? I did. All four episodes. And I don't think it's sometimes you watch something and the first episode doesn't really grab you, but then, you know, you get sucked into it and, oh, wow, this is really, really good stuff. I had the opposite experience watching the American Conspiracy Octopus thing on Netflix. I watched the first episode. I posted something about it on social media, and somebody messaged me and said, hey, you know, they don't actually make reference to Ken Thomas, even though they used a bunch of his research to make this. And I was like, wow, well, I'm going to keep watching it. But yeah, that's huge if true, right? And they don't. I watched the rest of it. They don't mention Ken Thomas, who was like, what? He was the guy. He was the man. You know, he was the man who brought this to a huge audience. Brought the Danny Casolaro thing to a huge audience. And they didn't even mention him. And as I was watching this, they've got, you know, the director. He's got all of his paperwork there, and it's like the stereotypical conspiracy nut with his, you know, office full of, you know, reams of paper with, in quotes, evidence on it. And just thinking, you know, a lot of this was done by other people, and he's sort of repackaging it and presenting it for a new audience, going back and getting some updated things, talking to family and friends of Casolaro, which is great. But then the last episode comes along, and they kind of undercut the whole thing. There's somebody they talk to who he decides, Christian decides is not credible. And they sort of use this as a lever to undercut the whole thing. He says, I know of one person who was in Danny Casolaro's room when he was died, and that's Danny Casolaro. So I don't know. It's kind of muddled at the end, ends on kind of a cliffhanger thing. Watching it, I mean, it just sort of, it's a massively convoluted story. It's been a long time since I've read the book on it, but it's just, there's so much here there where you're like, oh, they really need to dig more deeply into this, you know, like the authorities do. Oh, and the documentary didn't bring Robert Maxwell into it, and he was a huge part of the whole thing. So that was really it was really not great. I think I gave it 3 out of 5 stars on Letterboxd. All right. Next question. If you were to write another UFO book, what would it be about? Oh, that is difficult. That is difficult because if I knew what it would be about, I probably would be writing it rather than not. Knowing me, I would probably try to come up with some kind of proposal about the Detroit Flying Saucer Club, and I would then, once this went to contract and I started working on the book, realize that I've made a huge mistake, and there's not a book worth of material about the Detroit Flying Saucer Club, and thus I would expand it to other sort of small-scale flying saucer operations. But I think it would be something like that. I think it would be something about the sort of street level flying saucer organizations in the 1950s and into the 1960s. And especially as we've seen in some other episodes, the way the FBI approached these groups and observed these groups and had informants in the meetings of many of these groups. I think that's an interesting story that hasn't been as thoroughly told as it could be. But again, I'm not sure. I think it would be difficult to get a hold of documentation in some cases. A lot of the people involved are no longer with us, which is great if you're doing FOIA requests, but not great for interviewing people. So I don't know. I think that's sort of the direction in which I would go if I were to do another UFO book, which I am not. All right, it's another best and worst, or favorite and least favorite. Best or favorite UFO book? Oh, this is one of those where the next time I do an AMA or a listener questions episode, feel free to ask me again because I might have a different answer. It changes. It changes from day to day. But right now, gosh, I don't know if I can narrow it down to one. Actually, I can. There's best/favorites for different let's say favorite instead of best and worst. That makes it a little more sort of reflects the subjectivity. Favorite, They Knew Too Much About Flying Saucers by Gray Barker. It is a classic. More people need to read it. More people need to recognize that Barker was having fun writing this, but there was a serious kind of edge to it. There's a real sort of concern that he isn't sure what's going on. Now, later, his cynicism would fully sort of take off and take over, I believe. But They Knew Too Much About Flying Saucers is really good. And as I discussed back in way back when we started the show and I did an episode about Al Bender and the Men in Black, I was a bit surprised when I read correspondence down at the Gray Barker Collection in West Virginia that really the book is pretty accurate as far as it goes. Now, I would not say that about Bender's book, Flying Saucers and the Three Men, with the folks from Kayak and things like that. But I think Gray Barker's book is an accurate depiction of these saucer guys back in the 1950s trying to make sense of their friend suddenly becoming fairly weird. Now, I will also say that there are other very, very good books that are among my favorites out there. I would be remiss if I didn't mention Adam Gorightly's book that he wrote with Greg Bishop, A is for Adamski, sort of an encyclopedia of contactees with some great photographs, many of which are not available anywhere else. I think that's great. I think Gorightly's Saucer, Spooks, and Kooks is sort of an essential piece of investigation about the development of the sort of paranoid mythos in the 1970s and 80s and into the 90s, and sort of the origins of that and how it developed. Similarly, I think Greg Bishop's Project Beta and Christian Lambright's Ex Descending for that sort of Benowitz angle, very important books. I think Jack Brewer's The Greys Have Been Framed is really good. I think his book Wayward Sons, about the connections between the CIA personnel and the origins of NICAP, is very, very valuable. And yes, these choices are biased towards my concern that the UFO field continues to be setting itself up for being a tool to convey misinformation or disinformation from not just the government, but from various people who have their own nasty agenda. All right, and my worst or least favorite UFO book. I think to make this easier, I'm going to restrict this to books I've read for the show or topics that have been covered on the show. I think my least favorite book to plow my way through was probably, I think the books by Richard Boylan. I think those were the books that I had trouble with. Hot Tub Dick, as he's known around headquarters here, Hot Tub Dick has a writing style. And if you've heard him speak or his interviews on radio programs back, especially in the 90s and early 2000s, he's got a way of writing and speaking and presenting himself that is just sort of arrogant and condescending and is just, how stupid are you if you don't understand and believe what I'm talking about when he's saying the most outrageous dang stuff you've ever thought of. It just got very, very tiresome to read. And it's goofy, but there's no humor. It's bizarre and not well written in a lot of ways, but there's no charm to it. I would take almost anything over reading another Richard Boylan book. Close to tied for that are books by Stephen Greer for much the same reasons. Okay, back to being nice and positive about things. What was your best UFO travel experience? A couple years ago when I did a solo trip to Point Pleasant and had my weird experience with the vanishing black Cadillac, that has to be the tops. But me and Simpson J. Hanover III going down to Hopkinsville in 2020 with all of hotels being very strange due to COVID and things like that. That was a good trip. I would love to go back because there's some stuff that we didn't get to see. I really liked being on the trail of Buck Nelson last year. This year, I do know I'm going to be a speaker at the UFO Days Festival in Elmwood, Wisconsin, which is which just that's going to be fabulous. I think I'm going to be talking about Ray Palmer and Ray Palmer's influence. He's a Wisconsinite, so Ray Palmer is, you know, he's got his fingers in everything, right? You can, you know, say this is a talk, you know, starting with Ray Palmer and then branching out into everything. I'll have more details about that when it gets closer to the time. But I would like to go to Mount Shasta. I think that would be pretty neat. I would like to go to Mount Palomar to see if I can, you know, hang out at the wherever Adamski's Palomar Gardens was. Giant Rock. I need to go to Giant Rock. So many of the things I really want to see are over out west. So it's difficult to not difficult to get out there. It's expensive to get out there. So those trips will probably be down the road some. How would you do a prestige UFO related television drama? So one of these like sort of HBO or Netflix or Amazon Prime sort of prestigious limited series shows about something UFO related. That's a good question. I'm not a fiction guy. I'm not a TV writer, but my sort of dream was always that it would be great if somebody did some kind of counterfactual thing or something exploring the deal between Eisenhower and the Greys back in the 1950s. And then American Horror Story did that a few years ago, and it was outstanding. It was a lot of fun. Mamie Eisenhower being evil and all that. I think her head exploded at the end. I mean, spoilers, sorry. Yeah, it's good. That was good stuff. What would I do? What would I like to see? I would like to see, and this is going to, this is like the most gulliest thing ever. I would really like to see some kind of drama about Bill Moore and Paul Benowitz and all of that back in the 80s, or the Dulce Bass stuff, which is mixed up with it. But I want Rick Doty in there, you know, lying to people, you know, because that's his job, apparently. I want Linda Moulton Howe running around. I just want all the sort of strange characters who populated that world to be part of that. And I think that would go over really well. I think it would be, I think it would be successful and acclaimed. The only thing is, you might have to really sort of monkey with some of the things to make it kind of coherent and everything. But I think it would be good stuff. Last film you watched. Before I started recording this, I watched the classic Vincent Price film Witchfinder General from the late 60s. I'd been wanting to watch it I was watching it while doing grading midterms, which are due today, but which I wanted to get done before I did podcasty stuff. Really sort of fun film. Lots of people screaming while they're being burned at the stake. Vincent Price is good all the time. It's sort of very got that sort of British movie folk horror stuff. I mean, not Wicker Man level, but sort of Blood on Satan's Claw, if you've ever seen that. It's in that sort of vein. Really, really fun stuff. And the last question, as we finish up this, frankly, filler episode of the podcast, do you ever regret getting into UFOs? I don't think so. I don't. Today, I don't. Right now, I don't regret it. I think it has led me to meet people I would never have met otherwise, some of whom have become really good pals of mine. I wouldn't be a podcaster if it wasn't for UFOs. I might be. I enjoy talking into microphones. But yeah, it's opened up doors for me that have been really entertaining to walk through. It has been, I'm not going to say it's been lucrative when you balance out everything with time spent on it. Assuming my time has value, it has not been exceptionally lucrative, but I have not gone into debt over UFOs. Anybody who does go into debt over UFOs, talk to somebody, because that's no way to live. I don't regret it. I don't regret it. Sometimes I regret not getting more deeply into things, like joining groups and learning how to be a MUFON field investigator and things like that. But I've never been interested in that side of it. And I've never really been one to go join groups and talk to people in groups. It's not my sort of thing. I will hang around with people I already know. Thank you very much. But no, I've met amazing people by being into this. People, not just UFO people, but people into all other kinds of weirdness. And it's been good. UFOs have been good to me. Ask me again in a month and I'll probably say the opposite. But for right now, that's how I feel about UFOs, and that's it for the questions. Oh, okay, we didn't do a midway break, but I've got some midway break stuff here. If you like the Saucer Life and want more, you can support us in exchange for bonus content. Patrons get the episodes before everybody else, and there's bonus content every month. If you're interested, you can check it out at patreon.com/cheezomedia or via the link in the show notes. And you can always check out past episodes at saucerlife.com or your favorite podcast app. We're on Instagram at saucerlife. You can email us at thesaucerlife@gmail.com, or you can contact us by post at cheezomedia, P.O. Box 68, Grand Blanc, Michigan, 48480. And thanks for listening to this episode. I'm doing everything in a weird order, but our associate producer is Simpson J. Hanover III, and The Saucer Life is a production of Cheezo Media, LLC. Cheezo Media, our heart is with the people. Till next time, keep watching the skies, because the skies are watching you.